21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
The first day we biofueled up my Founding Fathers Art car has gone down in my book as a red-letter day, thanks to a dedicated bunch of volunteers at the Baltimore Biodiesel Co-op. Baltimore now has our own dispensing biogas pump available to our community, and anyone with a diesel vehicle can fuel up today and enjoy the benefits of fuel from U.S. farms instead of foreign oil. Of course, you should do your research first, and the best way to do that is to join the Baltimore Biodiesel Co-op. Visit www.baltimorebiodiesel.org. That's baltimorebiodiesel.org. No wars required.
Hi, this is Shirley MacLaine. Happy 20th anniversary to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
And I can't get around here doing my own thing. For I'm on a mission.
Did you hear me in there? Yep, did you hear me? I love singing with on those songs. Boy. Oh, well, we can't get into that. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus in this incarnation. And our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Kortner. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. And you are listening to Slim and the Supreme Angels. I used to visit every, I guess today you might refer them as African-American churches and sing my brains out in the back. I was always in the back there because I was the only white person there. And I wasn't that good a singer. But I wanted to put my voice into that. And, of course, our guest for the next 20-some minutes is Jim Mars. The book is Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, the Disinformation Company. And you can check it out on JimMars, MARRS.com. And what Jim was talking a little bit about, the moving from changing from National Socialism to Marxist Socialism among certain politicians within this country. You want to discuss that?
About the what?
The changing of moving from a National Socialist policy to a Marxist Socialist policy.
Well, over the past 9 years, the trepidations of the National Socialists, otherwise known as neocons, were becoming more and more obvious to more and more people, and it was beginning to cause a backlash, and it was time to shift gears. So the international controllers, financiers, have now shifted us from National Socialism to Marxist Socialism. With the election of Barack Obama, who no one had even heard of 2.5 years ago. So he is strictly a media creation. And he, of course, talks about change, which everybody was looking for and which helped propel him into the White House. But we're not really getting any change. In fact, going down the list of his appointees so far, we're seeing nothing but more members of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission. So our foreign policy will remain the same, and our economic policy will remain the same. Socialism will continue to spread in the United States, only this time it will have a little friendlier face.
So where do you think this is all leading?
I think that after 4 years of Marxist socialism, this country is going to be in such bad straits, economically, militarily, socially, that by the election of 2012, people are going to be so fearful and so confused that they're going to be ready to vote in our own Fuhrer, whoever that may be. Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose father was a Nazi party official, and who is not constitutionally qualified to be president since he was foreign-born, nevertheless seems to be a pretty good contender. And this may explain why the controversy over Barack Obama's constitutional qualification, seeing how that there is a lot of evidence that he was actually born in Kenya and is not technically, has never been naturalized as far as anybody can tell. We've never seen any documents. his birth certificate, of course, is being kept from the public, his school records, which probably would show that he came here on foreign student exchange scholarships, they're being sealed. We can't see those. And that's why that this controversy continues to fester, because that would probably lead people to say, well, he was elected, so let's just forget the Constitution of the United States.
Well, I remember the situation with Ronald Reagan and, of course, the emphasis at that time on the number of individuals that were involved in that administration that were heavily influenced by what you would call the Nazi philosophy.
Yes.
Along those lines. And, of course, that we didn't see any. I never saw a headline here in the city of Baltimore on that. I would love to. Now, I wish we would have had time to get into the chemtrails and why it has the big media has refused to investigate it. Friends, there's a great, great chapter on, is there a Nazi base in Antarctica? I've been following that story for 40-some years, and another news story that I know nothing about, which is do our road signs contain hidden codes, and how could such road signs facilitate a military takeover of the United States? We won't have time for that, but we need to get to Stevensville. Let's get to Stevensville first, because you noted that, yes, indeed, there is a change in the media. And let's give us a little history of the Stevensville, Texas sightings and how it's seen today.
Well, that goes back to the 1st of 2008 in January and early February, when the citizens around Stevensville, Texas, which is about, 20, 30 miles southwest of Dallas-Fort Worth, a rural county filled with just hardworking, down-to-earth people. These aren't people who are given to flights of fancy for the most part, and they all began to report these strange lights in the sky, these huge craft that they saw moving over their heads, some estimated to be as wide as a mile. And the big surprising thing about Stevensville was not so much these sightings, because such sightings have been going on for years, actually centuries. Of course, if you get all of your news from the corporate-controlled media, you don't hear about it because there is, I'm not going to try to say that there's control over every editor and reporter in this country, because, of course, there's not. But there is control over the distribution of the information. And, for example, in early 1997, when something very huge flew over Phoenix, Arizona. At the same time, there were important UFO sightings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and in the Atlanta area. And yet, unless you were in one of those cities and happened to catch the local news, you never heard about it because the news was not distributed. In fact, the Phoenix sighting, which occurred in March of 1997, was not reported nationwide for several months, when USA Today finally carried a story on it. But 2008, I think, will be marked as the time when we began to turn around in our appreciation of the reality of the UFO issue. The former governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, was on Larry King and said, well, yes, I poo-pooed it at the time because I didn't want to cause a panic, but I saw the thing myself going over Phoenix, and it was huge. It was a spaceship. It was unearthly. He is now on the record. The Stevensville sightings, at first the Air Force said, no, we didn't have any aircraft in the air. But after a couple of weeks and people continued with these sightings, then suddenly they backpedaled and said, oh, well, yes, okay, we did have some planes in the air. In fact, we had 10 F-16s in the area. 10 F-16s. Good,
yes.
Lord, do you know how much money it costs to put 10 F-16s in the air? I doubt you would see 10 F-16s at one time anywhere short of World War III. In fact, on the morning of 9/11, when we were under attack, the only planes in the air were like four F-16s, and that was in two flights of two each. So the idea that they had 10 in the air is really extraordinary. And, of course, when the newsman asked them, well, who's flying these F-16s and what were they doing? And we were told, well, we don't know. We weren't in contact with them. What? They send up F-16s, 10 of them, and we don't know who they are or what they're doing? I mean, that even caused some of the conservative Texas media to say, hey, what's going on here? What are they trying to cover up? Well, what they're trying to cover up is something quite extraordinary. We now have the radar data from the Stephenville sightings, and they were tracking objects in the air traveling thousands of miles an hour, and then some that were traveling less than 40 miles an hour. That's not even airspeed. You can't stay in the air at 40 miles an hour. And one of these large objects was on a trajectory and a flight path that would have carried it straight to the Crawford Ranch of President Bush, who was not there at the time, but nevertheless, that should have rang national security alarms. So, obviously, there's something going on. It's very real, and we are not being told about it.
What about the flare theory? I hear this all the time from those who have already thought that this was all like the Phoenix sightings.
Right. Just military flares.
Just military
Well, number
flares.
One, there is no one yet has picked up an empty military flare casing and said, oh, look, I found this military flare. The military flare thing, of course, got great play in the wake of the Phoenix sighting, and that was a brilliant move on the part of anyone hoping to cover up and to mask what actually gone on, because the thing that flew over Phoenix, this occurred about 8:30 at night. A couple hours later, about 10 or 10:30 at night, it is true that the Maryland State Guard flew over the Barry Goldwater Gunnery Range outside of Phoenix and dropped some military flares. And, of course, months later, when the story finally hit the national media, they said, oh, well, it's military flares. And some of the more astute reporters actually contacted the Maryland Guard, and they said, yes, we went out there and we dropped flares. So everybody went, oh, well, it was military flares, and they dropped the whole story. But nobody seemed to stop and think that the flares were dropped 2 hours after the craft had been seen over Phoenix. Not only that, but according to the flight commander of the Maryland State Guard, he said that they had some extra flares. They didn't want to go to the trouble of carrying them back home. So he ordered his men to just dump them, and he said they chunked them out one after another. One, poof, two, poof, three. Well, anybody who knows about military flares know that they're on little parachutes, and they float around, and they're susceptible to wind currents, and they're going to be bobbing around in the air, and they're not going to be in a straight line looking like windows on a craft. So the whole thing, if you want to trust the corporate media, then there's nothing. Go to sleep. Everything's fine. Nothing's happening. But if you want to use your God-given brain, obviously something was going on other than military flares.
Now, I'd like to close on the moon landings. This chapter, I keep referring to these as chapters anyway. This particular chapter, I think, is perhaps one of the best analyses, or whatever you want to call it, of the evidence concerning that America's moon landings were faked. And you basically conclude with, why are the moon rocks that were collected the best evidence that we have reached the moon? So why is that the best evidence that we actually made it to the moon?
Well, we've got these rocks that they say came from the moon, but then how do we know they came from the moon? And besides that, if you got a rock, we found rocks on this planet that we believe came from Mars, and we found rocks that we believe came from somewhere else. So how do we know where the moon rocks actually came from? I'm just raising the question.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to admit that I was in the Army in 1969, and I was there with a lot of soldiers, and I felt, I can still remember the pride and the excitement that I felt when we saw Armstrong step down on the moon. And it was really difficult for me to even entertain the idea that perhaps the moon landings were faked. But again, if you'll actually study the evidence, there is some very serious questions that have been raised. For example, the first time they landed on the moon, they planted the U.S. flag, and it flapped in a breeze. You know, we're told there's no air on the moon. There's no breeze. And then after that, they started putting all the American flags in these steel or metal frames. And even then, they'd move on, waver around a little bit. The lighting is really intriguing. We have photographs, NASA photographs, that they say were taken on the moon, and it's obvious the sun is in one position, and yet there's a light source coming from another position, backlighting objects. And yet, according to all the official records, they took no lighting to the moon. There's a lot of questions that have not been answered.
But then you also note, though, that in regards to some of these questions, in regards to the lighting, you've given NASA's reply to these, and I enjoyed reading some of their replies as to why it appeared that there were another source of light during the flash, and the perfect footprints. I mean, you review all of that, and we don't have time to touch on any of that. But, friends, I enjoyed this book a great deal, mainly because I've been following some of these stories for sometimes four decades. And, Jim, you just have a good way of bringing all that information together.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bob. I'll have to ask you a question, since you are familiar with so many of those topics. I really tried to simply put down in as objectively as I could, here is the issue, here's what the issues are. Do you think I did an adequate job?
Of course. What the hell do you think we have you on the show for?
Oh, okay.
You,
okay.
I mean, yeah. Yes, there's a reason why we have certain guests here, Uncle Jim, as our listeners know. We pay for this show. We are not going to go out there and read your book and focus on it. And if it's not, you know, I don't want to waste my time putting authors on who aren't the best in those particular areas. It's that simple, right? I mean, if you got so much money to make sure that the certain perspectives are heard, we thought that this was an important enough book that we make sure that our listeners know. You know, you're on one of the most conservative stations here in the United States of America at this time.
Right.
But many of them have not paid too much attention to what's been going on the Internet. And that's one of the great values. I have not mentioned something that is super important, and that is the website, AboveSecret.com. Tell us a little bit what you – I'm being told – Top Secret. Oh, Above
yeah.
Top Secret. I'm
above
sorry.
AboveSecret.com. Yeah. Yeah, that gave the title to the book. Well, the people on AboveTopSecret.com, which I'm really impressed with, because this is, as you well know, Dr. Bob, the way to find truth is to have open and honest conversation and discourse. And then if somebody says, well, it's this, and somebody else says, no, it's not, it's this, then you just keep working at it until you figure out what it really is. And unfortunately, in the corporate-controlled media, which we started off talking about, sins of omission are just, you know, mammoth. It's not so much what they're telling you, it's what they're not telling you. Mm-hmm. And that's why Above Top Secret is really so important, because they have what they call threads and forums, and people post stuff. And if they post, a load of horse hockey, then somebody else comes along and said, that's not right, and here's why, and here's what's right. And it's in that crucible of public discourse that, you know, you can get close to the truth. So when they came to me and said, we want you to write a book, and we want you to put down all these topics and these controversies, these conspiracies, my thought was, oh, my God, what are you talking about? You know, there's been books written on just one topic alone. And I said, now if I have to go and research and document and footnote every little thing, I said, this is going to be a tremendous effort. They said, no. I said, you've been at this for a long time. Said, just put it down there. Just put down, here's the issue, here's what they say on one side, here's what they say on the other, and here's what seems to be going on. So I'll have to admit that this has been one of the most interesting and enjoyable writing projects that I've ever entered into.
Well, this is one of, especially about all these different topics, this has been one of the most enjoyable books I've ever read about, and about the group of topics that you have discussed, which are really wide range. I mean, we didn't touch on stuff
We haven't even scratched the surface.
You know, spidery drones. I mean, America really should really be paying attention to these things that are flying around and are seen from time to time. I would have loved to have gotten into Is God an Alien or 2012.
Well, that was one of the most fascinating chapters.
And we didn't get to regarding the moon. What are some of the greatest mysteries of about the Earth satellite? And there are a great many mysteries about it.
Yes.
So all I can do is suggest, friends, go out and get a couple of copies of Jim Marr's Above Top Secret, Uncover the Mysteries of the Digital Age, The Disinformation Company. Check it out on jimmarrs.com. Thank you for joining us, Uncle Jim.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bob, and I look forward to being with you again sometime.
Oh, certainly. Coming up next, how to feel great all over your body just by getting a foot massage. So don't go away. UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com is the place to go to check out my latest book, a beautiful gallery of over 70 illustrations with many in color, plus ones we didn't have room for in the print version. Read some of the intriguing stories and other content we cut from the book for lack of space. Order an autographed copy online along with coffee mugs, pins, medallions, and other books available only at UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com. See the reviews of my latest book from Willie Nelson, Shirley MacLaine, George Norrie, Graham Hancock, Stanley Krippner, and many more. UnitedSymbolismOfAmerica.com. Check it out today.
Give what you can and take what you want at the Baltimore Free Store. The Free Store takes donated items and redistributes them throughout Baltimore free of charge. Do you have extra stuff laying around your house that someone else could use? Give it. Do you need things for your house, for your closet, or even for your art project? Take it. The Baltimore Free Store is an environmentally friendly way of redistributing goods and empowering the community. For more information, visit www.baltimorefreestore.org. That's baltimorefreestore.org or call 410-340-9004. That's 410-340-9004.
This is Dr. Richard Bartlett, founder of Matrix Energetics, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I am Dr. Bob Hieronymus, kinda. Sometimes I'm not. So take that. And, you know, in our final segment tonight, we are welcoming a new practitioner to the Ruscomb Mansion Community Health Center. And I must say, we are tickled down to our toes to have her move her practice to Ruscomb. Have you ever noticed how sensitive your feet are? And I'm not just talking about how sore they get when you've been standing on them for a few hours uninterrupted, but after a long day on your feet, you have probably instinctively given yourself a foot rub to make them feel better, and you might have noticed that just a few minutes of massaging your feet, you are suddenly revitalized. They perk you up and even make you think more clearly. Well, believe it or not, you were actually performing on yourself a little bit of what is formerly known as reflexology. And joining us for the remainder of the program is a certified and highly skilled reflexologist named Erica Grant. Erica is an expert at stimulating the nerves on your feet, hands, and ears. And in order to encourage a healthy flow of energy in your body, it also helps to create beneficial effects throughout. She's going to tell us how areas on the foot correspond to areas of the body and how reflexology assists the self-healing process. Erica Grant trained at the Baltimore School of Reflexology, obtaining a master's degree in art therapy and working at Shepherd Pratt and Springfield State Hospitals. Her bachelor's degree is in painting from the Maryland Institute College of Art, and she enjoys yoga, painting, knitting, and playing the cello. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Erica Grant.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, let's start at the beginning. What's the history of reflexology?
Well, some of the earliest representations of reflexology were found around 2330 BC in Egypt on the tomb of a doctor. There were pictures of people performing reflexology on others, rubbing their feet. Then there was the first book on what was called zone therapy in 1582 by Dr. Adamus Atticus in America, and it sort of went from there. The idea behind it is that there are zones that run down through the body and end in the feet, hands, and ears. And in each of those zones at the end, it corresponds with an organ or a spot on the body. And that just as in acupuncture, it's based on energy partly, and there can be blockages. So the theory is that by manipulating the feet, it clears those blockages, and it allows the body to heal itself.
Oh, I need to know more about that, because I find it almost, it's so extraordinary that you can rub certain areas of your feet and start to feel better in certain specific areas of your body. And I've always tried to figure out why that is. Are there like blockages of energy in the body that and if they are, how do they feel to your hands? What do they feel like?
Well, there are blockages and congestions, as we say. What they feel like are either harder spots or little bubbles or little crackling places that I can feel as I work on people's feet or their hands or their ears. And by manipulating those, it can clear out those spots.
What are those little lumps or grit? What are they made of?
I think it's just a thickening of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are lumps in the muscles that, similarly to what a masseuse would feel.
So it's kind of like a congested area?
Yes.
The area is hardened, and by massaging it or putting pressure on it, it decongests it. And does that mean that more blood then flows through that area?
More blood and also more energy, similar to how acupuncture works with drawing energy through the body to certain points.
Mm-hmm.
Reflexology works without the needles.
Well, reflexology is most commonly performed on the feet, but as you noted, you can also work on the hands and the ears. When and why would you work on hands or ears instead of feet?
Well, some people request hands or ears just to try something besides the feet. But there are also times when somebody might have a specific injury to their foot or a cut that would make that area inaccessible for reflexology.
Oh, yes,
and so,
of course.
Right.
Yeah, well, that certainly makes a great deal of sense. So would everybody benefit from a foot massage or reflexology?
Yes. Reflexology is good for a number of things. One is general wellness and health, boosting the immune system, and it increases energy. It often improves sleep. It reduces stress and tension. It can relieve pain. But there are also people that are suffering from specific physical ailments that seek treatment, and also it can be of great relief to people that are very sick or dying.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a look at the foot, okay? I've got my foot up here next to the microphone so everyone can take a look here. Now,
I see.
You see that now? Because you are going to be seeing it soon, I understand.
Good.
Yeah, because we're going to be getting together, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Me too.
In regards to, let's say, areas of the foot, let's take around the big toe area. Mm-hmm.
What does it correspond to?
What does that correspond to?
Well, generally speaking, the foot goes from top to bottom and represents your torso. So the areas of the tops of the toes would correspond with the top of your head and your brain and some sinus stuff. Mm-hmm. And then moving down to where your toes join your foot, it would be eyes and ears. And moving down into the ball of the foot, there would be your chest area, heart, lungs, and moving down some of the internal organs. And at the bottom would be near your sciatic area. And towards the center of your feet would be your spinal area. And on the outside of your feet would be the outside of your body, such as your hips and elbows and shoulders. And then we work a little bit up through the ankles, but not much past that, which is nice for some people that would like a massage but don't want their whole body touched and don't want to maybe take their clothes off.
The ankles, what do they correspond with generally?
It goes up the sciatic nerve along the Achilles tendon and then some of the reproductive areas. And the top of the foot is related to the lymphatic system. All the glands are represented too, all the bodily systems.
So is it accurate to say that with foot, if you're working on the foot, this type of reflexology, this type of massage can go a long way in improving one's health in all of these different areas just by being manipulated?
Yes, and the body seems to take what it needs. Some people have told me that they've come with the beginnings of a migraine that normally lasts for days, and that's been interrupted. That's been they've felt immediately better. Other people say their backs feel better after me working on them. Many people report a wonderful night's sleep afterwards.
I guess you do realize how few people have a wonderful night's sleep.
It's like an epidemic right now because I think of the general stress level. So that's one of my favorite things about reflexology.
Is the elimination or reworking of stress?
Yes.
Is that what you're... Yeah,
yes, well, and the fact that people get such a good night's sleep. Usually by the time I'm done working on them, they're either asleep or in a profound state of relaxation, which mm-hmm. I really enjoy watching people reach that state.
Well, it certainly would be a joyous state to be in, let me tell you.
Wonderful.
Let's take our break now. When we come back, no, I'm being told not to. Hey, I got a pass here. How about describing a typical session? What's it like?
Okay. Well, I have this really wonderful chair that reclines in a very comfortable position. So people come in, they sit down, they remove their socks and shoes, sit in the chair, and they recline. I usually put a blanket over them because sometimes people cool off while they're being worked on. And I clean their feet, put a little bit of cream on them, and start to work. And half of the work that I do is manipulating their feet, and the rest is specific techniques aimed at relaxation, and they just feel fantastic. And as I said, by the time I'm done, and it lasts an hour, by the time I'm done, people are usually in a very deep state of relaxation. Although, one of the nice things about the chair is that people are face up, so that if they want to talk, I'm available for that too.
Mm-hmm. How long does a session last?
Usually an hour, but people can request a half hour if they prefer that.
Oh, half hour, just get started there.
Right. You hate to stop there.
Well, I would. I've had such wonderful experiences years ago with this, and I'm really looking forward to finally being able to pick up again because mainly our schedule has been insane for the past 3 to 4 years. It's been just overbearing doing all of the specials that we've been doing for television and and the stress that comes with trying to help many other groups and organizations who are literally at this particular time falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
The economy is, I don't need to say anything more about that. Everyone knows that standpoint. Can a listener gain benefits from just one visit, or do you recommend a series of treatments?
Well, they can gain benefits from one treatment, but often people come maybe weekly 4 to 6 times before they feel the full effects. And then some people settle into maybe once a month or once a season.
There are little shoes. No, I wouldn't call them shoes. They're kind of like slippers that they used to call nappies, and that have like little prickly rubber points on the inside of them. Do you have any knowledge of those?
I don't. I don't think I've ever seen them.
Well, I'll show you a couple pair because I've done some research on my little feet. So, and I couldn't get when I didn't have a chance to get to see the person that used to work with me on it. I used to wear them, and they're a little bit painful. they are.
Uh-oh.
Reminded me of the Spanish Inquisition. But the thing is, and when you took them off, the relief was so great.
So that's worth it.
Yes, I know. What I mean by the relief is, it doesn't hurt anymore because they were pressing multiple areas, and that was my major concern. I mean, should you be pressing multiple areas all at the same time, or should you be working on just one specific area, like under the big toe, or you know what I mean by that?
Well, I like to work on one area at a time, but it sounds like it did you some good. So.
Well, it did. I felt blood all of a sudden going into areas of my feet that I didn't feel, literally, because the person that used to work on me would say things like, boy, your feet are like rocks. they would go away with sore hands and working on it. I'm serious. But that's the reason why I know the benefits of it. And I'm just so sorry that my life has been taken out of our hands here.
Yeah.
From that standpoint. Because the problem is once your work finally catches on, regardless of how old you are, it is time for you to go do it and get it done. I would much rather be on a vacation for the next couple of years. But it ain't going to be that way because of what you've got to do to make sure that you can continue your work.
Right.
Now, do have to take a break here. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, I'll ask you a question so you can bone up on it, right? Okay?
Okay.
Do some research on this. You can look it up on the internet, okay? We don't consider that cheating, except that many times the work information you get on the internet is going to mislead you anyway. But that's all right. What are some of the typical benefits of reflexology? And of course, does everyone receive those kind of benefits? Especially, are they the same benefits? We'll be back with our guest, Erica Grant, reflexology at the Ruska Mansion. Call for appointments or more information at 443-449-9411. A lot of fours there. I want to do some research on those fours. 443-449-9411. Or go to Ruscom, RUSCOMBE. org.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com. That's Zohara, Z-O-H-A-R-A, online.com. Find podcasts of decades of radio interviews, journalism, and photography. Find links to experts worldwide and in Maryland for subjects that range from where to sail in Maryland to the latest in UFOs. Find out about artificial intelligence and spiritual pathways. Zohara Online is a hub for finding books, people, and organizations in the business of doing good. It's always an adventure without reservations. Visit my website, www.zoharaonline.com.
Now I'm wearing out the shoes that Charlie wore. Walking back and forth across the floor.
Oh, my. Yes, I used to even sing those songs, friends. After I'd walked out of, I kid you not, after walking out of all the various African-American churches in the city of Baltimore, I'd stumble into some country western folks and have a good time with them. Well, you got to sing, friends. I just like singing. Our guest is Erica Grant, reflexology at Ruscomb Museum. Museum? Mansion? Sometimes I feel like a museum. Reflexology at the Ruscomb Mansion. Call for appointments or more information by calling 443-449-9411. That is 443-449-9411. Hey, that's five fours. Ruscomb.org, spelled RUSCOMBE.org. Now, Erica, what are some of the typical benefits of reflexology, and does everyone receive those same benefits?
Well, to answer your second question first, everyone receives different benefits, but some of the most common are very profound relaxation, improved immune system function, better sleep. You can find better digestion, pain relief, and sort of a boost in your wellness. Fewer illnesses, more productive at work, more energy, that sort of thing.
Improved immune system functioning. Boy, I am so glad that finally Western medicine is just seeing how important that is.
Yes.
If we could have put so much emphasis on improving our immune system over the past 30 or 40 years especially, I think we would have made very big, but unfortunately that was not part of the... That wasn't part of the regimen at that time.
Right.
Now, let's get to some more of your personal experiences with reflexology. You come from an art and art therapy background. How did you get interested in reflexology?
Well, when my friends or loved ones were sick or pregnant or having treatments of one sort or another, I used to always go to their homes and rub their feet. And one of my friends was having a course of chemotherapy, and I would rub her feet after the treatments. And she finally said to me, "You have great touch, and you should study reflexology and do this for many people." And a wonderful experience I had was later, after I'd finished my training, my stepmother was dying of lung cancer, and she'd been having chemo for about a year and a half and, of course, had not really slept well at all. And I went and did a reflexology treatment on her, and she got so relaxed, and she slept for 12 hours straight. It was wonderful.
My.
And
boy.
So I went to treat her as often as I could, and she always slept amazingly afterwards.
Oh, tell us about your training.
The training consisted of three classes at the Baltimore School of Reflexology. Each class was 2 days long. And then I took a written exam, and I had to do 100 pairs of practice feet, and then I took a practical exam. One of my favorite things about the training was that each time we went to class, we would trade off doing each other's feet with a partner. And I don't know where I went to during those treatments, but it was somewhere wonderful. I just love getting reflexology.
When you say you don't know where you went, do you think you may even have poked through another dimension from a time or two?
It felt that way, somewhere between sleeping and waking and another world and this world. Somewhere really nice.
Well, how has your reflexology work enhanced by your love of art?
Well, I think I have an appreciation for beauty and aesthetics. The space where I practice in is a very serene, calm, lovely space with some nice artwork there. So I think everything is informed by what I've done before, and I think the art therapy training, I had extensive training in verbal therapy skills and group therapy skills, so if people want to talk and need that kind of help, I'm available with that.
What about, you know, you play the cello. Does that in any way, does music affect your work?
Sometimes I play music, yes. And sometimes I use the music when I go places to do reflexology. I have several times traveled to hospitals or hospices and done reflexology there with people that were ill. It's a lovely gift you can give to a loved one that's sick or dying or just a stressed caretaker to give a reflexology session.
Well, one of those places was that at the Springfield State Hospital in Shepherd Pratt?
Those were art therapy. But I have done reflexology at Stella Maris and at, well, in New York City at Sloan Kettering.
Now, Stella Maris, is that,
That's the hospice up on Delaney Valley Road.
Oh, it's on Delaney Valley Road. I was thinking of the yes, it is the same place in which my dear friends, I have a lot of nun friends that were from Notre Dame, the Institute of Notre Dame, especially your sister Regina Geiger. We had the best time partying. No, we did. We did. A discussion over, she was one of the few, well, most of the sisters we could talk about angels with.
Mm.
But when we would, unfortunately, when there was some problems with the priests in regard to this, and I just loved the way many of the nuns knew just how not to bring up those particular topics. But if we were alone, we could because what goes on up at the altar during the Mass of the Holy Eucharist is one of the greatest healing experiences for anyone. That's one of the reasons why I was so attracted and was going to study to be a priest for a while. When working up at the altar, I could see, sense, and feel things that were otherworldly.
Wow.
And I know that many of the nuns had the same experiences, and saw things, but did not bring this out to open discussion, unless they were with a group of nuns.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be very careful along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me, you've just begun working at Ruscomb. What do you think of Ruscomb?
I love it. I think it's a wonderful spot, and I have twin boys that are 15 now, and I had brought them there to see Dr. Hinderberger many times. It's just a wonderful spot. It feels good. It's comforting. It's soothing. I love it there.
Well, I've been involved with that particular property for over 40-some years, and I can tell you it is really a magical place. It really is.
It is.
A lot of higher angelic type of beings are there night and day.
That's what I understand.
Yes, indeed. We hired them all.
Good job.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us, Erica Grant.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I look forward to seeing you within the coming weeks.
Good.
Seeing you repeatedly. Reflexology at the Ruscomb Mansion. Call for appointments or for more information at 443-449-9411. 443-449-9411. Ruscomb, RUSCOMBE.org. See you next week.
The rising sun and the place it's coming from is inside of you. Now your payment's overdue.
Most powerful names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheeler.